So one other vehicle for, you know, a quote-unquote acquisition is a combination of two business units, right, or two divisions into one, right? And so a joint venture, really it's a recognition that you've both parties have something they can contribute to one venture. They recognize synergies associated with that. They want to sort of maintain some level of control and governance as they pursue some line of business. I mean, I actually see this a lot in what I'm doing. We do a lot of project level JVs, but there's also some JVs where we're looking to combine expertise and business units to try to really develop out a business. You know, the frequent issues associated with this, and it's JVs are really, really complicated and challenging because of these issues. It's governance and control is one, right? I mean, if you're kind of viewed it as a 50-50 JV, is someone going to have a decision-making ability over certain areas versus, you know, the other partner? It really becomes complicated. It also highlights the need to have a dispute resolution provision and to really address deadlocks, particularly if it's 50-50. You got to address capital calls, the funding needs of the JV, distributions, exit strategies, and really related party transactions kind of can become real sensitive if you've got, contracts with the one of the JV partners, the other JV partner may increase their scrutiny and review of those contracts. And it just, there's all these different challenges associated with joint ventures. Something that you don't see as much in the M&A context, definitely is one path.
Good. Thanks, Derek. The next thing we're going to talk about a little bit is just the principal M&A agreements, just to kind of give an overview of that. On the slide here, you can see we've kind of broken into what I call preliminary agreements, which are before the definitive agreement is signed, and then the transaction agreements, which obviously are the definitive agreements. The first of the preliminary agreements I wanted to talk about briefly is a confidentiality agreement. So this is 100% standard. I don't think I've ever seen a deal, where it didn't start with an NDA. And, from a legal point of view, especially when you're on the sell side, it's really important to get an NDA signed right away because you're obviously, going to be disclosing quite a bit of information about your company and you want to make sure you have an NDA in place. I would say that just using kind of an off-the-shelf NDA that you might use for kind of commercial transactions is probably not the best place to start. Sometimes you can do that and maybe supplement it later. But when you have an M&A transaction, there are certain things in the NDA that you want to include that may not be in a normal commercial NDA. And one of those is a non-solicitation clause. You're going to be, in the M&A context, you're going to be disclosing a lot of information about your employees and what they're doing and what they're paid. And, you want to make sure you have a tight a restriction on the other party from soliciting and hiring your employees later, if the M&A deal doesn't end up happening. Also on an M&A deal on the NDA, if the deal moves forward, you're going to be disclosing extensive amounts of information about IP. So you really want to make sure that you're, that you have very tight protection there. You may even want to have procedures to set up, clean rooms or attorney-only review of certain, the most sensitive information. And again, the other thing in an M&A context, a lot of times the buyers are going to be competitors. So it's just the NDA is just really important to get in upfront. And if you get forced into using an off-the-shelf NDA, a lot of times you're going to want to amend it or put in a new NDA afterwards. And the key provisions in the M&A NDA, it is similar to a commercial NDA. You're obviously restricting both the disclosure of the information and the use of the information. We're mainly talking about public, private M&A deals today, but in a public M&A deal, the use restriction could be very important, because you want to define the use as a friendly transaction. And if you're able to get that language in, then you could have some protection against, the buyer, taking hostile actions later. Really not an issue in a private M&A deal. Also, in a public M&A deal, one of the key things you want to have in a confidentiality agreement for M&A deal is, a standstill provision. So you basically, if you're going to be disclosing information to a potential buyer, you don't want them to, again, in a hostile fashion, be buying your stock on the open market and putting pressure on you. So, again, in a public M&A deal, if you're the seller, you're going to want to have a standstill restriction preventing the buyer from, buying more than, whatever, 5 or 10%, some relatively low percentage of your stock. And then the other side of that is, the buyer is going to say, well,